Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and welcome to Healthcare Consumerism Radio. This is your host this morning, Jonathan Field. I'm filling in this week, and I'm here with Ron Bachman. Good morning, Ron.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing great today. We have a good program today. Coming up in about 10 minutes' time, we're going to be talking about mindfulness in the workplace. And we actually have Kevin Renner. He is the Senior Vice President at eMindful. He'll be joining us on the program, talking really about the latest findings from the front lines of corporate mindfulness programs. eMindful, as many of you may know, is one of the leaders in this space and really one of the organizations that started kind of the corporate focus on mindfulness. So they have years of data, research, best practices, et cetera, on mindfulness. So, you know, stay tuned, 11:10, that should be a very interesting segment on an emerging segment of this market. Following Kevin at 11:30 a.m., we will have Terry Dunn, and Terry is with Millennium Trust Company. And actually, we're going to be kind of switching the focus to retirement account portability. So, you know, more focused on defined benefit, defined contribution, IRA plan. Kind of the trends that we're seeing in retirement in corporate America today. So should be a great program.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. These actually are two topics. I think when we get into them, we'll see some linkages between these on focusing on the individual and sort of the well-being, whether it's being sure that retirement is being taken care of, that you're talking about from a well-being, the focus on the individual. With eMindful, it's about learning about teaming and leadership and communications, so the well-rounded training and exposure of people to things that they should be doing to be mindful of their impact on others really fits into the concept that's developing out there, some would call well-being. So it's not just about health, but it's about all the other aspects of what you do in life and how you interact with people at the workplace, and obviously carries over into your personal life. And the idea of retirement certainly has a big impact on how you feel about yourself and your family, your financial security. All those sorts of things are coming to the forefront, and we're beginning to see the linkages between those in the whole space of healthcare consumerism.
Yeah, absolutely. That's kind of one of the big themes that's emerging for this year's Forum and Expo that you know, we're seeing more strongly than in years past. And if you're listening out there, you can actually visit with both of these companies at Forum this May in Atlanta. Kevin will be participating on a panel with, it's called the panel 405. So on track four, keys to implementing mindfulness-based programs for more resilient employees. And that's all about reducing the stress and increasing the productivity of your workforce. It's going to be led by Phil McCauley, and Kevin's got some good company on that panel. You know, the folks at Millennium Trust, you can actually find them on Wednesday. They will be doing a table topic. So during the lunch hour on Wednesday, Rosie Martinez and Mark Copin, both with Millennium Trust, will be doing a table topic on automatic rollover solutions for the healthcare industry. And Ron, we just, you know, we're putting the finishing touches on our Healthcare Consumerism Outlook magazine. So that should be up on our website probably on Monday. So, you know, this is kind of the pinnacle of our editorial calendar where we bring in various experts to discuss, you know, their niche of healthcare consumerism, whether that's health savings accounts, healthcare transparency, pharmacy benefits, medical travel, et cetera. And Ron, talk a little bit about your contribution to this year's issue.
Yeah, I put out sort of a history of healthcare consumerism, which on the surface may sound a little bit boring for those who are not history buffs, but this is really about trying to see how you fit into the whole development of healthcare consumerism and how it's not something just new and out of the blue, that it fits into the logical progression of what we've done over decades of time now, and it is now the area where the focus and innovation and creativity and new products are developing. I kind of started out with a phrase, I think, that sort of sets the tone. It's an old saying from Winston Churchill, who once said, "You can always count on Americans to do the right thing after they've tried everything else." Well, we've tried a lot of things in healthcare. We've tried payment reforms, insurance reforms, cost shifting, self-insured funding, HMOs, PPOs, and all sorts of other things. And we've really now come around to maybe what many would say is the right thing to do, and that is an emphasis on the consumer, the patient. So we now really have much more of a focus on a market-oriented, consumer-centric, patient-centered, personalized health, whichever term you want to use, and you wrap that all into what we call healthcare consumerism. So it's really a progression that starts in the 1920s, but it's a bullet point, so it's not some big thesis on each of the major changes in healthcare that have occurred over the last number of decades, but it shows how it's part of a continuum of the process of trying to find the right way to deal with healthcare cost, access, and quality, and a little bit of a peek in that article about why we see it going beyond 2015, 2016, and some of the new advances that we see in healthcare consumerism, whether it's a more of a focus on longevity, not just health, whether it's about the science improvements, genomics, technology, social media, all sorts of things that are really a part of healthcare consumerism, and why these conferences that you're talking about are so exciting, because we're bringing in new ideas, new concepts to show how this whole process is continuing to evolve. It's not stagnant. It's not set in concrete in any way, shape, or form. It's a very dynamic marketplace that the Institute of Healthcare Consumerism is trying to share with everybody so that people can understand the broader picture and not focus on some narrow niche.
Yeah, in the piece, as you mentioned, it ends with a long paragraph on the future of healthcare consumerism, and you know, touching on kind of the increased focus from employers, one on healthcare access alternatives, and we're seeing that in the program for Forum, where more and more employers are adopting things like telehealth and direct payment healthcare type arrangements.
Right. And, you know, I think if people really want to get into the future of healthcare, we have a pre-con that really we sort of drive through the Institute for Healthcare Consumerism University, the IHC University process, where you can actually, at the end of the day, take a test and, get a certification for being a qualified expert, a CHCC certified in healthcare consumerism. And that pre-con workshop has been very popular, and we'll talk about all the aspects of IHC and some of the basic core principles we think that are with us today, and what's going to happen in the future. We talk about five generations of healthcare consumerism, and we're only in the third, maybe in the second, moving into the third a little bit, and have various aspects of the fourth and fifth generation, some of which we're going to be able to talk about some of those concepts today with our radio guests. So this is an exciting time to be there, and I would suggest anybody who can make it to the forum, it's not too late to sign up, and we'd love to see you in Atlanta.
Yeah, absolutely. So we do still have our early bird rate. So right now it's still quite an affordable rate to anybody out there that has not registered but would like to attend. You can visit viccforum.com, top right corner. There's a register button. Just hit register now. And we actually also are offering our employer VIP program still. So if you're out there and you're making the HR benefits and healthcare decisions for a mid-size or large employer, you can actually fill out the form right there on the employer VIP section and get completely free access to this year's show. And we've already had quite a few large employers, both from Atlanta and nationwide, use that this year. And, you know, while you're on the website, go ahead and check out some of the speakers that we have lined up this year. We have Elizabeth Dixon at Chick-fil-A, and She's the founder of Atlanta Wellness Professionals. She'll be leading off the show with Sarah King, Director of Wellness at Harbin Clinic, Jamie Benton, Manager of Benefits and Comp at Rollins. We have a lot of great people from the Atlanta area, like Jody Brainer with Willis Towers Watson, and regulars like John Hickman. So, you know, we invite you to go to theiccforum.com, check out the program that we're putting together. It's going to be a good show this year. And actually, we're ready to transition now to our first guest. So I would like to welcome Kevin Renner, Senior VP of eMindful, to the program. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Excited to have you on the program this morning. Before we dig into kind of some of the research and data here on mindfulness, do you mind just giving our audience kind of a background on eMindful?
Oh, sure. eMindful has been providing employers with applied mindfulness programs since 2009, and we deliver those programs in a real interesting and very scalable format. So our programs are actually courses, typically 10 to 12 weeks in length, that are delivered live but in an online webinar-style classroom. So we are able to reach very widely dispersed employee populations with simplicity. And so it is a great way for employers, particularly large employers, that have people around the country or around the world, to give them a consistent, quality-assured mindfulness training experience. But the advantage also is that, by doing it live as opposed to some sort of pre-recorded or on-demand content, people really get the benefit of participating in a class and an ongoing community with others. And so we found through some research we have done with one of our large customers, for example, that we actually had higher levels of engagement and participation in the live online classes than they had in the live on-site classes. So that's basically our business model. And we've worked with well over 100 companies around the world, and with employees in more than 135 countries now.
And, before we get any further, can you kind of talk more concretely about what, people may have some idea of mindfulness being maybe breathing exercises or, yoga type meditation or whatnot, but can you give us some more concrete examples of what those classes may consist of?
Oh, sure. Well, breathing and following one's breathing is one of the tools to learning mindfulness. There are others. There are formal mindfulness practices that we teach, as well as informal practices that people can use throughout the day. But the specific applications that we have for mindfulness include really the most popular and traditional area, which is stress management and resiliency. So there are 10 and 12-week classes that we offer that meet once a week. That address employee stress, resiliency, and burnout. But as well, we have adopted programs that have followed a lot of the scientific literature of the last decade and have applied mindfulness programs in five other areas that are really quite interesting. Metabolic syndrome and weight management is also very popular, and mindfulness has been shown to be extremely effective in regulating behavior around eating and food. We have a program in diabetes, dealing with diabetes. We also have an applied program in chronic pain management. We have a program in smoking cessation that has very, very high success rates. In fact, higher success rates than the all of the other approaches, including the Cancer Society. And then we have finally a program in cancer support, applied mindfulness for cancer care. So these are all areas that employers have found to be really, really significant either costs for them or issues for their employees. There's a wealth of research. Willis Towers Watson, for example, found that stress and obesity are the number one and number two issues facing employers, and over three quarters of employers are pointing to those as top risk factors. So we really tailored mindfulness based upon the scientific literature so that we could apply it to these high-cost, high-risk areas facing employers and the people who work for them.
Ron, did you have a question for our guest?
Yeah. Kevin, this is Ron Bachman. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Hi, Ron.
The programs that you're putting together, for those maybe who haven't been using sort of the technology that you're describing, might they think of it in terms of sort of today's electronic version of lunchtime programs to train employees in various areas?
Sure. I mean, it's you could think of it almost as a virtual lunch and learn, where
right.
people can dial in, you know, they can go into a conference room or at their desk, or, you know, the classes are offered during work hours as well as after work. And so, yeah, it's I think that's a good metaphor. People can just treat it as a kind of a lunch and learn.
Yeah. The you know, one of the big topics that we hear about and that is going to be, you know, sort of front and center in many ways at our Atlanta conference is the concept and terminology that's becoming a lot more common these days, well-being. Is e-mindful or the mindfulness that you're describing sort of a key part of well-being, or how do you see the connection between what you're doing and maybe the term, and do you use that term, well-being?
Yes and yes. We do use that term, and it's a broader umbrella under which mindfulness plays a major role. And, you know, you've seen this evolution in employers where they have really started to recognize that, you know, it's not that employee benefits are the endpoint, but that benefits are a means to an endpoint of the overall well-being and health and productivity and emotional mm-hmm. stability and health of their employees. So that is really how we see the marketplace developing, and mindfulness does play a major role within that.
So why do you think employees today are in greater need of these services? What is it about the marketplace or the culture or the environment or the change in maybe the generational changes in the workforce? What is it that's causing so much stress in the workplace that needs to be addressed with programs like yours?
Yeah, so I'd like to talk about stress and then also obesity. So, I mean, stress is just now endemic in the workplace, right? I mean, every decade, the intensity of global competition heightens. The nonstop connectivity to our jobs increases. We are, you know, we're online 24/7 now with mobile devices and our phones. So people struggle to get away from the demands of their work. You know, there are all kinds of surveys that come out, of course, and you guys see them as well as we do. One of the most interesting that I came across a few months ago was that literally in the span of 1 year, the percentage of employees reporting that they were stressed at work jumped from 73% to 83% in the latest survey. And that's a 10% jump in 1 year. Another piece of research, as I was looking through some of the data out there before our interview, was that the employee assistance program CompSych found that 56% of employees experience high stress levels, right? And that's accompanied mm-hmm. by feelings of extreme fatigue, feeling out of control. And so, you know, these are people who get sick more often. There are people who are absent more often. There are people who are distracted at work more often when they're under that kind of stress. And, you know, there was even really, really pioneering research by Aetna a few years ago that was published in a peer-reviewed journal. And they found that the most stressed employees in their workforce had medical claims nearly $2,000 higher than employees right. in the lowest quintile for stress.
Mm-hmm.
So the stress issues are just pervasive.
Now, you talked about obesity as well. You know, what I've always told employers and what we go over at our conferences and my pre-con that I have on healthcare consumerism, I tell employers that, you know, if you don't have a stress management program in your workplace, I can assure you 100% of the time your employees have their own stress management program. It may be comfort food, it may be smoking, it may be alcohol, it may be drugs, but they're going to do something to relieve their stress. And so the programs like yours step in there and give a positive direction to those stress management programs that employees otherwise are maybe go off in the wrong direction. So is that the connection between obesity and the stress programs, is that people are overeating, they're not paying attention to themselves, they're not getting the right medical care, and I guess not everybody necessarily makes that connection, but it's real there from the data that you're quoting.
Yes. One of the issues associated with overeating is just what you pointed to, is that it's a reactive pattern for many people to the stress that they experience. And, you know, we're all familiar with the term comfort food, right? And, it's an enormous problem. I mean, the medical costs of obesity, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, $147 billion a year. And so one of the things we teach in the, we call it Weight Balance for Life program, is really connecting to those inner signals of hunger and fullness and stress and the role that they play in overeating. A third of the population in the U.S. is overweight, and a third of the population in the U.S. is obese. Those are really, really expensive issues for employers.
Right. How does your program take into account, the use of personal devices that might give feedback? Do you focus on that, or do you see that part of your future, or do you see that as a growing part in the marketplace that relates to the services that you're providing through your webinars?
Yeah, you can certainly practice mindfulness very, very successfully without any kind of a feedback device. And in fact, that is how most people practice it. You kind of attune to your own feedback, but we have a partnership with the Muse product, which is that brain sensing headband that has become quite popular. And so we've developed a recent business relationship with them. And in fact, we had a very successful kind of market launch with them January and February of this year. So we absolutely do, partner with companies such as those folks. And for people who want to use that kind of feedback during their training, it's certainly a viable option.
Another tool to use. Where do you see the market going then in the future with your programs and maybe new ideas and creative thinking in this whole space?
Yeah. That's an interesting question. I think this year is truly an inflection point in the marketplace, and I've been working with eMindful since 2010. Part of the reason I say that is just the upwelling in proposal requests we're getting from the major consulting houses and large employers. Part of it is seeing the presentations at conferences. The interest level at conferences. We said at the beginning of this year as a company that we truly thought that within 5 years, 80% of Fortune 500 companies will have adopted mindfulness programs. And that was our internal judgment just as a management team of the company. And, 6 weeks later, there was an article in Fortune that quotes a Fidelity and National Business Group on Health research program. And that they are forecasting that this year, 22% of major employers are going to offer a mindfulness program to their employees, and that next year that number could actually double.
Wow.
So I don't think our kind of intuitive sense of the marketplace of, 80% within 5 years, is probably a pretty good assessment. The market is accelerating so fast you can smell the rubber burning in it. It's just really taking off.
Well, I think if you get more familiar with some of the basic concepts that IHC has been promoting, you'd see that your products and services are a good part of what we call our Generation 3 and part of Generation 4 personalized health. And the whole market's still in Generation 2. So you're clearly on the leading edge, and I think it's very exciting to hear what you're doing and the idea that the marketplace is responding so positively to you. I think we all hope that we can move rapidly into these future ideas and concepts. I think we're about out of time, Kevin. Would you tell people maybe some takeaways and then how they can best get in touch with you or with somebody at eMindful?
Oh, sure. Well, there are a few key takeaways, and I think that those are that the problems that mindfulness can address are pervasive and urgent for employers. The solution is real. It's interesting. There were literally 20 years ago, there were 2 scientific papers published that year on mindfulness. Last year, there were 902 published. So the science behind this is real. And our research as a company over the last 6 years has validated and seen the same kinds of things that are reported in the scientific journals in terms of stress reduction, metabolic syndrome reduction, productivity improvements. All of that is echoed in our research. And I would say that if anybody would like follow-up information, whether it's white papers on any of our research or further conversation, simply feel free to email me, and they can reach me at Kevin, just Kevin, at eMindful.com. And I'd be happy to respond with any of the resources that we have.
Great. Well, thank you very much for a very informative discussion, Kevin. We look forward to seeing you in Atlanta. Have a good weekend.
Oh, likewise. Thanks for having me on the show.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Jonathan, any thoughts on what you just heard or getting ready for the next presenter?
Yeah, we have about, 3 or 4 minutes before our next guest comes on the show. So, I really like what Kevin and his team are doing there. And, I think it makes sense as we talk about the latter generations of the healthcare consumerism. And, I think it's really important, as he mentioned a number of times, the peer-reviewed research that they have on the effectiveness of mindfulness in the workplace. And again, to remind all of our listeners out there, Kevin and his team will be with us at Forum and Expo this May. And again, he'll be on session 405, Keys to Implementing Mindfulness-Based Programs for More Resilient Employees. So again, if you have more questions for him or his team, make sure you're at Forum and Expo. He's going to be participating on a panel with several other leaders in the space, including Cheryl Jones, who leads the wellness program strategy at Aetna. So that should be very interesting.
People come to the conference always looking for, what's developing and what's new, and what's creative out there. I think that Kevin and eMindful have taken some of these ideas of stress management, combined them with the other aspects of behavioral changes and wrapped it all around evidence-based data and studies they've had to give a very compelling case. And obviously the market is responding positively to what they're doing. So it's, people who have not fully fleshed out these types of programs or looking for, what's working with others, this is the place to come in Atlanta for the conference to find out more about these types of new initiatives that are going on. And sometimes people say, well, that's, stress reduction, stress management, that's an old issue. Well, it's a concept that's always been with us, but we see some new turns and twists and use of new technology and new approaches, new creative ideas and thoughts in order to make these things more effective. So if they're not working in your marketplace out there, in your company, there may be some key ideas or tidbits at least to help you make these programs more effective. So it's pretty exciting to see everybody sort of working on how we can improve our overall healthcare, but our well-being and our mindfulness is a key part of that well-being. You said, like Kevin said, it's a subset of well-being, but it's a very important developing area of the well-being initiatives that are going on.
Yeah, it is. And, it's, as far as part of our program this May, we have a Emily Knoll, who is the Director of Well-Being Services at CBiz. She's going to actually be doing a panel of employer case studies all about transforming wellness programs and taking them kind of to the next level of well-being culture. So Emily will be leading Latonia McGinnis, and she is formerly the wellness manager of Racetrack Petroleum, and currently at CBiz, Mindy Pierce, who is at Adventist Healthcare, and Julie McGovern, who is VP of HR at Anne Arundel Medical Center. And then also what kind of fits into this greater trend is the emphasis on financial wellness. And when you talk about reducing the stress of your workforce, you know, financial wellness is becoming increasingly important. And we have Denise Winston, who is the founder of Money Starts Here, and she will be leading a multi-stakeholder panel. We have the director of research and innovation at Willis Towers Watson. We have a director of benefits on that panel. And then we have Carlos Hernandez. He is at Aclaris, and he's going to be talking about how Aclaris is kind of innovating and doing some work around financial wellness, which is a
perfectly the next segment, doesn't it?
Absolutely. It's what I was about to say. Perfect segue for our second segment today. And, you know, we'd like to welcome Terry Dunn to the program. Terry is a senior vice president and managing director of Rollover Solutions Group at Millennium Trust. Good morning, Terry. Let's see.
We got him
good
on
morning,
the program.
Terry.
Yeah, good morning. Hopefully you can hear me now.
Yeah, we got you now. Thank you for joining us this morning. And if you could please start off with kind of giving our audience an overview of Millennium Trust Company.
Sure, I'd be happy to. Millennium Trust is a financial services company. We are primarily in the IRA niche space. And realistically, our two or three businesses focus on helping investors with IRA decisions that they make. One business is specific to using IRAs to invest in alternative assets, such as hedge funds, limited partnerships, real estate, precious metal, things like that. And the other business, the one I manage, really helps corporations, healthcare corporations and others, when they have a situation where participants in their retirement plan no longer work for the company. And basically the DOL, the government, allows those plans to move those participants into an IRA if they're missing from the plan sponsor. And so we help move those individuals into an IRA and basically reunite them with their money. So that's a little, you know, a little bit of a summary of what we do. We've had a lot of success over really the last 15 years, and it's definitely a growing business for a lot of reasons. There's a lot of money moving into IRAs, and there's a lot of baby boomers that are retiring.
So talking about the healthcare industry in particular, why do you see so many healthcare workers changing employers so frequently, and how does that compare to other industries?
Yeah, I think that's a big factor in today's society, and the healthcare industry really isn't that different from most other industries, in that people are only staying employed with one company on average from 3 to 5 years. And a lot of this has to do with employees have many options, many choices. They're looking for advancement in their careers. They're looking for more pay, aren't we all? Looking for better benefits. And really, there are a lot of young people, you know, in the healthcare space, a lot of millennials, they're getting married, they're starting families, they're moving around. I would say that millennials often think 5 years at the same company is kind of like forever. And that's really changed in our society, and the healthcare industry is no different. And it is interesting, because really the topic that I'm going to talk about today really does hone in on that concept of stress management, and particularly in the financial wellness arena.
And Ron, did you have a question for our guest?
Yeah, Terry. Welcome to the program. It's Ron Bachman here.
Hey, Ron.
Your last comment. I'm doing terrific. Your last comment really connects the two segments. I don't know if you had a chance to listen in much on the earlier segment, but the whole idea of wellness now graduating, if you will, into well-being, more around the whole person issues around stress and management, whether it's work, whether it's personal life, and clearly financial is a big part of stress in most people's lives, and that's where your emphasis is. Let me ask some questions about two different segments. First, the individual. Tell our audience a little bit about, as an individual, how you would help them with their IRA and maybe rolling over or self-directed accounts, or how does your services help or affect individuals?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. Well, largely what we want to do is help individuals make sure that they are making appropriate investments, make sure that they are well diversified in their investments. And although we don't give specific investment advice, we work with a lot of advisors that provide that advice to individuals, and then we're the IRA custodian. And so our goal as the IRA custodian is to help individuals have access to the right investment vehicles and then provide them with excellent quality service. We answer the phone, immediately on a timely basis. Our people are well-trained, well-organized, very helpful in answering questions to our clients as a whole.
I know on your website you sort of have custody as our core, so your core business is holding those IRA assets, I take it from that comment. And could you explain to people in our audience, because this gets into the weeds pretty deeply that, you or I or others may be somewhat familiar with, but if you try to roll over an IRA from a company you've worked for and you don't do it properly and you receive those funds, isn't there some big tax consequences that people want to avoid? And is that one of the main things you're trying to help them with as they try to move from company to company and retain the tax advantages of their IRA?
Yeah, absolutely. Basically that when someone leaves a company, they become somewhat of a burden to the plan that they're already in. Many times that given plan is not going to allow them to stay. Sometimes they will allow them to stay if they have a larger balance. But fortunately, there are alternatives that are very beneficial and allow an individual to continue to get the tax deferral benefits and the benefits of investing in good vehicles. So really the three choices, the better choices, tend to be leave the balance with your former employer. So as I said, some employers will allow for this. Second mm-hmm. choice would be roll it over into an IRA. And I think this is a great choice to allow yourself really more control over your investments and more choice of investments. There are, stocks, bonds, CDs, money markets, ETFs, alternative investments. It's easier for you to work with an advisor. And most importantly, it's a nice opportunity to consolidate your retirement assets in one place. And the third good choice, would be roll it over into a current 401k plan. So you've left one employer, you go to another employer, and they might allow you to move your money into that plan. And that's also a good choice for consolidating your retirement assets. Not every employer is going to allow that, but those are your three best choices. On the other hand, probably the one choice you don't want to make is where it gets distributed to you in cash. You don't roll it over into an IRA, and therefore you're going to have an income tax consequence on all those assets, and you might have a penalty because you're younger than 59 and a half. So we
right.
do help in the communications and our marketing materials and everything else, our educational materials, to, you know, help individuals make the right choices and to think it through.
And talk about your corporate, or what some might call your enterprise solution. How are you working directly with companies, and are you providing that sort of educational service through the employer so that you're sort of a backroom solution provider, but the individual is getting the information as part of their previous employer's services, if you will? How do you work with employers, I guess, is the bottom line?
A little bit of yes and no to that question. So we work regularly with corporations, healthcare and otherwise. I would say a majority of our clients are in the healthcare space. We work with a lot of hospitals and a lot of medical centers. But anyhow, it's really a situation where employees no longer work for a company, continue to participate in the plan, and yet they've likely moved. They no longer are communicating with the company, and therefore the company, in essence, is at risk that they're not properly communicating with people, and that's a requirement of ERISA. So one thing we do is we work with corporations to minimize the chance that they are creating problems for themselves. They send out a letter to those participants. They don't come back because the participants have left. They don't have a good address for them. They roll it over to us at Millennium. We then have search tools to find almost everybody. We find probably about 90% of the participants immediately and, in essence, reunite them with their money. They're often very happy. They had forgotten they had money, and now they have money. And we, you know, encourage them, talk to them about what it is they want to do. And often they leave the money in an IRA, or maybe they roll it into a 401k plan that they're currently working with.
I'll get a few minutes. One last question, I guess. The millennials, I guess, younger people in particular, seem to be in a bind these days. The cash flow just to pay for their family expenses, having children, having a house. Where do you see the future going in terms of people actually being able to set aside money for retirement, which we know is getting more and more expensive because of health care issues themselves? But where's the movement of retirement going when people are suspect about the Social Security benefits even being there when they retire?
Great question, and you forgot one important expense that the millennials have that many of the rest of us didn't have to this extent, which is
parents, yeah.
College loans. That many, many of the millennials have big burdens with paying back their college loans, and this has created a big problem for them. But let me just say that, you know, Kevin previously in that previous conversation was talking about stress and those kinds of things. And the problem today in our society is that we do have this expectation of living a long time, that longevity because of, you know, health care, because of better medicines, because of better lifestyles, whatever it might be, people are living maybe 10 or 15 years longer than what they had expected was possible. And yet in today's workforce, people are saving not enough. And so the concept of retiring at 65 has gotten very difficult. and because most people won't have the resources that you work until you're 65, and you might be alive for another 30 years. So,
right.
You know, that's a big issue, particularly in light of the fact that, you know, healthcare costs and many other costs, housing costs, will continue to grow to be very substantial. So
mm-hmm.
we at Millennium really spend a lot of time trying to figure out, you know, ideas and things that people can do to improve their situation. There is going to be a retirement crisis for many people, but if individuals take the time and do some research, figure out, you know, what their cash flow situations are, work with advisors, they can improve their situation, they can minimize their stress, but they have to, you know, basically start early if they have that possibility.
Great information. You know, we always run out of time when we're getting into these great discussions about topics like this. You want to give some quick takeaways in the last 60 seconds that we have, and then how can people best get in touch with you?
Yeah. So takeaways, I would say that, you know, that advisors are there to help. The government is trying to do things that can help in this, you know, potential retirement crisis. There are a lot of good tools that are available, like IRAs, roll-ins to new retirement, new 401k programs. People are going to continue to switch jobs, and they just have to plan and take responsibility for what it is they're trying to do, and maybe they can minimize sort of that crisis or that stress for themselves. And if people are interested in more information, we have, you know, white papers and a variety of information ready and available on our website. My phone number is 630-368-5675, and our website is mtrustcompany.com. mtrustcompany.com.
Very good. We appreciate it, Terry. Great, great discussion, great information, and look forward to seeing you in Atlanta. Have a good weekend.
Wonderful. I'm in Atlanta right now. Wonderful. Thank you.
Great. Okay. Jonathan, a good program today. You want to try to wrap it up for us?
Yeah, a lot of good thoughts. We appreciate both Kevin and Terry, you know, spending time with us this morning. To any of our listeners out there, you can, you know, talk with the teams at eMindful and Millennium Trust Company. Both of them will be at Forum and Expo this May at the Cobb Gallery Center here in Atlanta. Early bird rates right now on our website, theiccforum.com. And we will be live with the program next week, so thank you for listening this morning, and have a great weekend to everybody that tuned in. We'll see you next week.
Okay, bye.